Hello, everyone. This is Tesla Car episode number two, I would call it. So this is me recording episodes for the podcast while I'm out doing errands. And for this one, I'm going to be talking about the cognitive cost of workshops. This has been on my mind for a while. Excuse me. And I think something that requires some discussion. For a bit, I've been seeing facilitators say, you should always have your camera on. Camera's always on while you're in the workshop, so that we know that you're paying attention to what we're doing. And we want to be able to see what you're doing and be able to blah 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 blah. First off, it's a control mechanism that continues from in-person facilitation that's completely and utterly unnecessary. Makes no sense to do. You aren't conveying empathy. You aren't really helping the situation. All you're really doing is it masks a certain level of control. I rallied against it for a while, and I was bumping heads with a few people around, like, what is the actual benefit of forcing somebody to have their camera on? What if somebody is basically suffering from COVID, which actually happened before, or knows of somebody that's suffering from COVID and doesn't want to turn their camera on but still wants to get involved? Are you going to force that person to do it? Makes no zero sense. And that started the whole conversation and the thought around cognitive cost. And let me explain this concept a little bit. So whenever you go to an online session for like 45 minutes, an hour or something like that, whatever it may be, there's this certain amount of budget that you have with any participant around how long they're going to stare into a monitor or how long they're going to be paying attention to a whiteboard. I don't know if it's greater or less if they're more motivated to be in the workshop beyond the facilitator actually having to do it, but I get the sense that there's a limit to how long you can keep somebody attentive in a workshop, even with breaks. So if everything's going well and people are really having fun, then there may be the possibility that they're doing pretty well and you can leave them over for like an hour, 2 hours, so on. And still have those like 10, 15 minute breaks you bring into everything. But I wonder if, no matter how good or how bad or how amazing or how like draining a particular workshop is, that you are inevitably going to come up against something where people are just going to tune out but not tell you, if that makes sense. They're just going to kind of go, hey, it's great. I'm moving things around in my mural or my Miro. We're having a good time talking to you, and we're conveying, we're sharing information. But at some point, people mentally check out. It just there's just so much screen that you can actually pay attention to before you just don't pay attention anymore. And I'm not equating this to motivation of the individual. I'm saying that staring at a monitor over a long period of time is eventually going to break down where someone is not going to do it anymore, and they are either going to be paying attention to something else, or they're only going to be giving you the necessary required attention that they seek. I think that it's a better strategy if cameras on are used for particular situations. Here's what I mean. You only turn them on in the very beginning, say when you're all meeting one another and you're all getting together and syncing up and saying, hey, there's a human there. I recognize that person. Everything's good. Then when you get to the actual whiteboard, you shut it off. You turn it off. You just use the audio. And that's it. You don't use video. It's not required. If you did use video, you're just looking at somebody staring at something else on their screen, and they're looking past you. So I don't really know what the benefit of that is. How are you going to interpret what people think and feel if they're basically trying to concentrate on a small little square on their screen and another monitor? Makes no sense. The other time that you can do it is when you're actually discussing. So when you're discussing something around, like an end result of something that you see in a mural, like. You can just go through, like, say, an ideation session, and then you'd go through a voting. You want to have a little bit of a discussion around there. Then it makes sense to switch from the whiteboard to, talking to one another. But even then, that's a reach. Because more often than not, they're going to keep their eyes fixated on what they've just created and basically kind of interpret the results and look at those rather than looking at everybody else on the video. So, really, it seems like the only time you should have face-to-face interactions and keep the cognitive cost low of the workshop from a face-to-face standpoint is to just ask for their attention during the times where you're making transitions. So like say in the very beginning, when you're first starting the workshop, when you go to have a break of, 10, 15 minutes at the top of the hour, so that you can kind of break up the sessions, thing probably around those times make best, or, you know, towards the end when you want to take a group shot or what have you. Mural has a utility where you can just basically, like Slack, you basically just use phone calls for everyone to dial in and talk while you're working on the on a particular whiteboard, which I haven't tried personally. I think that the only missing link to that is just some sort of scheduler where you can kind of schedule out what you're going to be talking about in the future. If it was hooked up to a schedule, it'd be fantastic, because then I wouldn't need Zoom and have to pay the monthly fee. But I kind of think that you have to come into a workshop with the idea that there is a limited budget, some sort of budget that you have with everybody around how much time they can actually concentrate on something. And that goes for exercises too. If you're asking somebody to go through 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 exercises to go down this rabbit hole of exploring an idea and a topic, either, you know, expanding the double diamond, narrowing it, whatever it may be, every single exercise is going to be to the point where I think by the time you hit around 3 or 4, you really risk throwing the digital spaghetti on the wall kind of thing kind of happens. And I almost feel like the real thing that you should seek is that it's similar to real life meetings, that you're trying to come to a decision about something. But that's the whole point. So if you do some sort of digital exercise, it isn't just to explore an idea. If it's something that prefaces a discussion around, say, exploration, then you could use that exercise to explore the idea. Same thing with making a decision. Before you come to the decision, use a design thinking tool to narrow your thinking around what that decision may be. So when you come to it, then you can have the discussion and then break. So I wonder if the more effective kind of workshops are not these 7-8 hour bonanzas of time and effort, or even 3 to 4 hours. I wonder if they're really just, you have a conversation and you skew towards the human beings talking to one another versus going through a series of different exercises like I've done with some of the workshops I've done. I don't know yet. I probably discounting the fact that people have a lot more stamina to kind of go through all these things. But I wonder if there's benefit in really scaling that back drastically and concentrating on the relationships that humans seek to have with each other online, and using that as the base and the foundation for everything else. So if you're starting out with trying to figure out the problem, there has to be a lot of discussion and exchange of points of view. And then if you need an exercise to clarify what everyone's thinking, both silently and explicitly, then you go down that route of using it. I kind of see cognitive cost being one of those metrics that isn't talked about, that's just assumed by not only participants, but also facilitators and workshop organizers. And it really should be part of the planning that you kind of factor into things. It also, the personnel that you have in any given workshop also probably influences this. So say you have a bunch of strategists that are getting together to talk about strategy around something related to fiscal year 2021 that's coming around the corner. And I've had these conversations with clients earlier. The last thing that they want to do is work on a whiteboard to figure out what their thinking is. They want to have discussions around what they're concentrating on, what they're thinking about, and they want somebody to track it. So normally there's a note taker, or there's somebody that can use a digital whiteboard to kind of put all that in there. So people can reflect on what's been said and see where the conversation's been going and if it needs to be reframed or repurposed. So in that way, it's very effective. The cognitive cost really isn't there, not forcing people to kind of engage and think and ideate and sort out different bits of information unless that comes after. So context and people probably have a big influence of it, but I think the kind of workshops that I've been doing with the Dash and with the Global Virtual Design Sprint, yes, there's a lot of work involved, and there is a lot of digital whiteboards that need to be used for figuring out different thoughts, perspectives, seeing where things go from a group perspective. So yeah, I get that. Sometimes it's unavoidable, but I think there's a clever or smart way to think of cognitive cost, or the cost that you're going to ask people to of their time to concentrate on something related to a workshop, where you aren't overburdening them or overtaxing them, constantly having their screen on, constantly looking at whiteboards, going through sorting, affinity diagramming them to death, which is something I'm guilty of because I've done it in the past. So yeah, that's something I've been trying to work out. How much is too much? When should you not ask people to do 7 or 8 different exercises on a whiteboard? When does it make sense to execute particular exercises? And I'm coming around to the idea that really you can do it after the discussion is done. So discuss, exchange points of view, go through different things. And when you sense it's like you either need to make a decision or you need to summarize and kind of condense what's been talked about to move to a next stage before you do a break, that makes more sense. So let's frame it. It would be 40 minutes of discussion, 10 minutes of exercise, or 50, or 35 minutes of discussion, 50 minutes of exercise, and then a 10-minute break. So that at the end, you can take some time to think about what was just done in terms of a decision-making process, and then move forward to the next stage. So each one is cumulatively moving the envelope forward, or moving the discussion forward in a logical fashion. So maybe that's a framework that works. Another one could be the idea that there's asynchronous, that the entire effort is asynchronous. So it doesn't involve a lot of people all trying to do ideation at the same time. We've done a number of experiments this year on that, on asynchronous sprints or asynchronous kind of work. I think there's been Matt Pupa and Lee Duncan, people that I've worked with that have been doing a lot of work in this area. There's a lot of people that are also interested in kind of seeing how this goes. I think it needs a framework for it to be properly done. I don't know if deadlines are the answer. Like, you have to have a deadline to get certain activity done. And for those of you who don't know what asynchronous means, it really just means communicating with each other, but not in real time, or working with each other, not in real time. But basically, you do a little bit and you leave it for the other person to kind of take over or work off of or consider before they go and do their thing. So that there's kind of a back and forth of like a offline in terms of like people posting, giving opinions. I know there's a deadline with asynchronous where you have to get certain things done. And you're more at the mercy of other factors kind of interfering with that. But I think asynchronous is something that could work with the idea of maintaining low cognitive cost, so that people can donate or they can contribute to something, whether it's ideation or information, put in their own 2 cents. Once they've done all of that for, say, like an activity or a workshop, then that framework of discussion, decision, break makes more sense, because you'll have, say hypothetically, everyone's looking to decide on a solution sketch for a design sprint. Everyone posts their solution sketch way in advance, puts all their 2 cents in their notes, and as long as people make the deadline, then you're good. Then once people get together, the discussions are on the solution sketch, exchanging points of view, you make a decision on a particular fashion, and then you're done. You take a break. Now the question is, should it just be that one thing? And then the storyboard and the design sprint will be next, or a prototype that may say, okay, what can we do asynchronously that maximizes everyone's schedule? And then what date in the future can we put on our calendars where we do all the work offline, and then we get together to discuss, make decisions, then break, or, you know, kibitz at the end. I don't know, but that framework seems really compelling. Asynchronous work, Then look everything over before you get together. Then get together, discuss for bulk of the hour, make a short exercise to help decide, and then once you're done, take a break or end it with the idea that you can continue the conversation in small groups and see where things go. So that's an interesting possibility. So maybe that is something that has some possibilities. But again, the whole episode is about cognitive cost, and I think it's an important thing to talk about, or it's an important thing to consider when you're planning a workshop, that if you have a budget of a certain amount of activities that you can do for your group, that you should keep it limited to a certain amount of time and activities to get the outcomes that you're looking for, and not stack 7, 8, 9 activities in 1 3 or 4 hour session, because you're just going to drain people really, really badly. Now, real quick, there's the argument that you might not have everyone's time scattershot all over a calendar like that. That solid block is what you really need to keep them all focused and not kind of broken apart. That is a possibility, but I wonder if the appeal of not having a solid block of time is actually helps with scheduling. Don't know. We'll have to explore another time. But anyway, that's the second episode from a Tesla car doing a errand, and hopefully the entire concept of cognitive cost was appealing to you. If you did like it, find me on LinkedIn, do a search for Robert Scrobe, and find me and start a discussion up and just say podcast. I like to talk about this because I like exploring these options. How I would incorporate that in, say, like the Global Virtual Design Sprint, I don't know, but we'll see. Anyway, thanks for taking some time to listen to this. And if you have any suggestions for future errand topics, then please let me know. Okay? Take care. Hope you're enjoying your weekend. Bye-bye.